This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
So I want to talk a little bit about what I wanted to talk about, which, and Kat, I was sort of spurred on by being at your house at dinner the other night, and also some other things that are going on in my life is, do we really want enlightenment? You know, we're in this practice, and you know, for the newer people, it might not even be a thought, right? It's just like, I just want some relief. I want some stress relief. I have high anxiety. You know, I want to stop eating so much. I don't know. People come for all kinds of like self-help reasons. Oftentimes people come because they're just in a tremendous amount of pain or something big has happened in their life that isn't working so well. So we're looking for pain relief. But then ultimately, what the Buddha is talking about is this full-on liberation and freedom from suffering forever. Right? This gate to the deathless. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase. I actually have it tattooed on my body because I like it so much. So living in this question, like, what would ultimate freedom and liberation be? And what would that mean? Would it mean I have to give up my favorite sexual position? I don't know why that came first. Would it mean, okay, well, let's go back to ice cream. Would it mean I have to give up my favorite ice cream? Would it mean I have to give up, you know, cussing? Would it mean I have to give up luxury items like nice cars and art, nice clothes, shopping? What does this liberation mean? Freedom from what? And freedom to what? And if I have to give up something really big and exciting, would I actually want to be totally free and liberated from suffering? Because that's what the Buddha is proposing, being totally free and liberated from suffering. So I read this this article, and this author is actually talking about this. And he says, I finally figured out why I am not enlightened. And he writes actually a whole book about it. And he refers to this Zen master story. So a man approaches a Zen master and asks to be shown the path to enlightenment. The master replies, okay, follow me. Stands up and walks the man to a nearby river and into the water. Without warning, the master forces the man's head under the water and holds it there as he struggles violently for his life until he is nearly dead. Those are the Zen people. They do stuff like that. At last, the master pulls the man up, gasping for air, and says, when you want to be enlightened as badly as you wanted to take your next breath just now, come back and see me. Yeah, let's just sit with that one for a sec. Because they're serious, right? These were the seekers of the day that went into homelessness and gave up everything. They became renunciates and just walked the path of spirituality because they really did want this deathlessness, this end of suffering. So what he's saying here is you have to want that. We need to want that as much as we want to take that next breath. I'm just throwing these things out at you guys. I'm not saying this is necessarily what I think. I would just want to throw out some fodder and then we're going to talk about it. And then he says, at the time as a youthful spiritual adventurer, the story inspired me and got me fired up and fueled the years of seeking, meditating, and exotic travels to distant lands that followed. Yet now, looking back, I'm wondering if I could have saved myself a lot of time and trouble had I simply answered the question implied by the story honestly. which was no. No, I do not want to get enlightened more than life itself, more than I would crave my next breath were my head being held underwater. So I guess my question, if we don't go to the extreme of calling it enlightenment, right? Because that's a really big word. But what if someone were to say to you, I propose that you don't have to suffer anymore? And I have the way to do that. Because I've done it. I'm not talking first person right now. I've done it, and I know how you can do it too. How many in here would say yes? Not everybody. Because you know what would come next, right? So I'm throwing these things out here to you guys, right, for fun. I'm not saying that I hold any thoughts around this. But my impression is not that the Buddha was saying that to be free of suffering, that we wouldn't get to experience all that life has to offer. I actually think that what the Buddha was saying was exactly that, is we are experiencing everything life has to offer. The 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, as it's called. And yet we're not having the attachment to it. Still having the full abundance of whatever is arising and not being attached to it, not clinging to it. This is what the Buddha says causes suffering. Not the suffering itself, but the clinging to things is what causes the suffering. Suffering is going to happen. Pain and suffering are part of life. It's if we cling to the ideas around it that is actually what keeps us from being free, that keeps us from the liberation, right? So I'm with you guys. I want to have the riches of life, have meaning the richness of life, the full life experience. But I do think, and I hope, and this is the only reason I'm sitting up here, is that we get to do that without getting slammed and pulled and torn every time something happens that we either like a lot, because if we like it a lot, we want more of it. We want to hold on tight to it. Or if we don't like it, we want to push it away, right? Super simple, super basic. So what I kind of wanted to explore with you guys is how you, and I want you to write it. I'm just in that mood. I'm going to hand out paper and pen. And this is really an exercise for you. And it's an exercise that you can think about. Like this is fodder for thought, because really this is the whole of the Buddhist path in a way. This is kind of like the cage match between Mara, who I'm going to read a little story about, Mara and enlightenment. So Mara being all of the temptations of life. All of the things that keep us in pain, that keep us thinking that we're not worthy, that keep us in our old, habitual, harmful patterns. So Mara isn't only worldly temptation, what's going on out in the world that we might want things, but it's also how we talk to ourselves. Mara is how we feel greedy in our minds. And I'll read this story really quickly now, because it might help to understand where the Buddha was with this. After he reached his enlightenment, and this is why I say to you, once you reach enlightenment, as the Buddha says, it's not like suffering goes away. Because after he reached his enlightenment, Mara, who in the Buddhist paradigm, Mara is the evil one, sort of, you know, the devil in Buddhism. He's also called the Lord of Death. Mara is the tempter, the one who, that little voice in our heads, like even today when you were meditating, it was the voice in the head that said, what am I doing here? I really could be watching what's on tonight. I don't know, Monday night. What's the big show that everyone wants? Monday Night Football? Is it football season? You know, that's Mara. Mara's that voice that tells you that you're just not doing it right. You made the wrong choice tonight. Yeah. Mara's the voice that looks in the mirror in the morning and tells you that you're ugly. Mara's the voice that, when you want that job really bad, tells you that you actually aren't smart enough to get that job. You're not good enough to get that job. Mara's the voice that, when you're abandoned, you feel like you're the unworthy one and deserved it. Right? So Mara's that voice. And in Buddhism, and in the Buddhist mythology, he actually shows up as a deity, as a form, and is constantly coming to the Buddha. I can't see you guys at all. Is constantly coming to the Buddha over and over and over again, trying to tempt him out of this rigorous practice that he has. Because there's actual joy there, deep, unending joy that threatens Mara, that scares Mara. I won't take my glasses off again. I'm actually going to read it. So this is 7 years into Buddha's enlightenment, and Mara is still coming to him. And Mara says, do you now dream in woods, immersed in sorrow? Have you lost wealth, or are you pining for it? Is there some crime done by you in the town? Why do you make no friends among the people? And is there none that you can call friend? So he's sort of just putting the Buddha down, just saying, the way you're doing it's wrong. You don't have riches. You live in the forest. You don't have any friends. What's wrong with you? You're a problem, right? You're not doing what most people do to be happy. And then the Buddha says, the root of sorrow is dug out of me. Unsorrowing, I meditate in innocence and free of taints. O cousin of the careless, as one rid of all hankering for being. And then Mara says back, the things of which men say, it is mine, and men who utter the word mine, if you have thoughts allied to these, you cannot then escape me, monk. I'll read the next part and I'll tell you about it. Things they call mine, this is the Buddha, I call not so. I am not one of those who's saying, hear this then, evil one, the path I know you cannot even see. So what Mara is saying is, when we get completely and totally attached to me and mine, he's talking about it, attachment to the self that we hear about so often, attachment to clinging to the idea that this body is fixed and permanent. You know what? I'm getting a little too far from where I want to go. And I see faces looking at me like, what are you talking about? I'm gonna turn around a little bit. And I'm gonna keep it more comfortable for me. I'm gonna keep reading. If you have truly found a path that leads in safety to the deathless, depart, but go by it alone. What need to let another know? So this is Mara trying to say to the Buddha, you've found this deep joy. You have found this deathlessness, which isn't attached to what you get, to this life. You have found this, but I don't want you to tell anybody, right? He said, you can know this, but what need you to let others know? He didn't want the Buddha to go teach. He didn't want other people to experience this freedom. People who seek to cross beyond, this is the Buddha, ask me where death cannot prevail. Thus asked, I tell the end of all. Where is no substance for rebirth? Did that make sense to anybody? When I was reading that, I was so enthralled by it, and I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever read. And then sometimes when I reread them to other people, I'm going, oh shit, they're in a totally different mind state than me right now. But basically what that dialogue was about was how the Buddha had found this ultimate freedom. And it had nothing to do with this form. It had nothing to do with somebody's job or partnership or the worldly things. It had everything to do with this eternal freedom, this gate to the deathless. And what Mara keeps trying to tempt him with over and over again are the worldly temptations that we all fall for, those really short joys, the things that aren't lasting. And so how I like to use these sort of mythological tales, the mythology that is often told in the suttas of the Buddha, is when I'm hitting a moment, like you were talking about in your meditation, or where you're hitting a moment in your life and you're noticing a lot of negative self-talk, a lot of ways that we do and are suffering, is seeing if you can see clearly what it is that's happening. Is that Mara that's visiting you? And like I say, this is a mythology, but it's kind of nice to use. Right now, the question is, right now am I suffering? If so, why? Is Mara present? And then so my question to you is, what do you hold on to in your life? What have you held on to that keeps you suffering? What's your thing? Because there's this way that we kind of use suffering to our benefit, right? It's kind of like, if I've had a bad day, then that means I get to go home and eat too much. Or if I've had a bad day, it means I get to go and go shopping and spend too much money. Mm-hmm. Because I deserved it, right? I had a really bad day. If I had a bad day, or whatever, you know, there's this way, these ways that we really hold on tight to our suffering, that we identify with our suffering, and that we use it. We like our story. We tell our story over and over and over again. I suffer because ... Whether it's our parents, whether it's our social situation, whether it's our finances, whether it's our job, whether it's our relationship, we have these stories about why we suffer. And so my question always is this a suffering? Is this something that I'm holding on to because I've grown really attached to it? Do I actually like this? I used to think suffering was super romantic, you know, that it was just, there was something sort of, kind of like in a way what you're talking about, something really rich and beautiful about it. So I would find myself in situations, or I'd put myself in situations unconsciously, really, so that I could feel alive, you know? Because if things were going too well for too long, I got bored. And so there's a real simplicity, in a way, that's being asked for. There's a real renunciation that's being asked for. In order to, if we want to, experience this liberation. And I think on the whole, if we look around us, most people don't want that. Most people like their stuff. Their stuff tells them who they are. Their car tells them who they are, right? If I can drive this, it means I'm something. I'm throwing that out as a gross judgment, but I'm just using it as an example. And there are these ways that we really don't almost know how to define ourselves or be ourselves without these multiple layers of suffering that we've thrown on top of it. I work with private students often, and I had one of mine today who's been seeing me for about 3 years. And she's really, really, really attached to her perfectionism, to the point where even her husband doesn't really know her. She's so attached to it, and she is fucking perfect. I mean, she's amazing. And I'm not talking just physical, because she's that too, but she is a very accomplished woman. And she helps a lot of people, and she's just stellar. She's an amazing person. And she suffers greatly because she's so attached to her perfection. I saw this movie. Has anybody seen that movie, Hippie Masala? It's a documentary. It's a great documentary. It's about in the 60s and 70s, there were millions of hippies that went from the West to India. Millions. And this documentary is about the few that stayed. So most of them went back. As the guy says in the beginning of the documentary, he said most of the freaks left. But they did. This was about a story that followed 8 people that actually stayed. And there was a part of me that was watching it, and I was watching my judgment, because they were living complete renunciate lives, a few of them. And there was this part of me that was like, losers, you know, like you're not working, you're not doing this thing, you're just living. And the interesting thing was, every time I would have a complaint, that's exactly what they would talk about. And what they were really saying is, we couldn't live in the West anymore. We couldn't do that daily grind all the time, so that we could get less and less happy, so that we could get farther and farther away from just living, just being alive, just being simple. And so when I heard them saying that, I was like, yeah, they're right. You know, they were living just off the land. Not that you can't do that here, but they really needed to go there to do it. They were just living off the land. They were praying. They were meditating. They were doing their thing. And they weren't feeling the pressures. A lot of them were talking about the pressures that their parents had laid on them. They weren't feeling the pressures of day in and day out life. They were just living. And they were finding a lot of bliss in it. Most of them did not ever put their joint down, so they were all high all the time. And so there was this piece that, like, yeah, we can do this here and not get busted, because a lot of them had been busted for drugs earlier. But it was an interesting sort of idea around, you know, that's another part of Mara, that thing that just keeps us held so tight into a structure, a concept, an idea of what it's supposed to be. And that's what this student of mine is so stuck in. She has to stay perfect no matter what. She's gonna. And when I talk to her about this, she's like, sorry, you know, it's not gonna happen. So it's just interesting. So my question, I'm not going to make you write it because time is already up, but I'm going to just throw the question out there to you. What holds you? And is it necessary? Like, do you have to have that in your life? Do you really have to? And what would it take to not? Even if it's a thought, that incessant thought that you have every single day. What's your first thought of the morning when you first wake up? Is it like, oh, fuck, another day? How am I going to get through it? Or even if it's a low grade of that, like, ugh, you know, maybe it's just a low grade of that. Is it, yeah, I get to do this again, you know? And why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't it be that? What's going on in your life that wouldn't be possible, that wouldn't be true? Yeah, so I just want to throw that idea out to you. And ponder it. How do I use my suffering actually to benefit me? What am I holding on to? How have I identified with it? How is that now my personality? Sometimes people think we're not so interesting when we let go of our suffering. You know? There's a lot of beautiful art that comes out of our suffering. There's a lot of beautiful poetry and music and, you know, so many things that I've heard people in retreat say, well, if I let go of this, then who will I be? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a big question. Who will I be? So ask that of yourself. So then it comes back to the question, do I really want enlightenment? It might be boring. What if it was? Seriously. Interesting. So let's just sit for a minute. Just allowing ourselves to resettle in our body just for a minute. And holding this idea of what freedom looks like. And what would I have to give up to get there? And what multitude of endless joys would I gain?
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.